Welcome to the Road Ahead Cafe. Hang on to your hat and enjoy the ride, because you're about to get some powerful insights and practical hacks that will take your daily life to the next level. And now, here are your hosts, Rick, Frank, and Peter.
Welcome back to the Road Ahead Cafe. I'm your host, Rick Gabrielli, and I'm here with change facilitator Frank Vandenhorst and the mindful pathfinder Peter M. Fellows. And this week is all about optimism. Yeah. Peter, can you give us an idea of what you'll be sharing with us today?
Yeah, thank you, Rick. It's always great to be back here at the Road Ahead Cafe, where you and Frank managed to remain optimistic about me coming up with something that sounds half sensible. It's great to be here with our faithful audience. And I have a few ideas for you guys to nibble on today, but I'm sure Frank and Rick will have something much more substantial fare for you after me. Back to you, Rick.
Great stuff, Peter. Frank, how about you? What are you going to share?
Okay, thank you, Peter, for your update again, as positive as always with a smile. It's optimism in practice, isn't it? Optimism. Interesting word, isn't it? What happens when you pronounce it? The first vowel, the O, is opening your mouth. Optimism opens up possibilities, opens up options. The term derives from the Latin optimum, which means the best. Optimism is often related to words like hope, confidence in success, and positive in a positive future. Optimists expect good things of life to happen. Yeah. Pessimists mostly don't. So, to quote a writer called William Ward, he says, "The pessimist complains about the wind, the optimist expects it to change, and the realist adjusts the sails." Mm-hmm. According to Ward, optimism is positioned between pessimism and realism. What does this really mean? Are optimists and hopeful people the same? Is being a pessimist or pessimistic a bad thing? If you want to know more about what these fearless podcasters think about the subject, stay tuned. Rick, what about you?
Wow, good stuff, Frank. Thank you. So to me, optimism is hope. Frank mentioned it. And, you know, as I thought about this word, I thought about in my own life, Optimism is hope. And hope is very, very powerful. I watch others and I see how they show up. And I always seek optimistic people, just one of those things. And it also gives me hope. So I'll dig into this further when we get into the grit. Peter, what are your thoughts on optimism?
Well, thank you, Rick. So I went to the eye doctors for a regular exam one time, and she told me she had bad news. I had a freckle in the back of my left eye. So I'm thinking like, okay, I wondered where my childhood freckles went. It didn't sound so bad. She said the freckle was so big that she couldn't measure it. It was huge. So I said, all right, so I'm probably looking at what, world's records, Guinness Book of Records or something. She said I should see a specialist. Now, that's usually a bad sign. So I coaxed her, you know, oh, what's the worst here? No, I just go to see a specialist. I said, no, what's the worst you're worried about? She says, well, you might lose an eye. And I'm thinking like, well, I could get another one, right? She goes, yeah. And I could choose the color, right? Says, yeah. So it's not all bad, right? And that's how optimism works for me. It's not blind faith in one narrow specific outcome. Like, okay, I will not lose my eye because I'm optimistic, because I didn't know whether I would or not. But it's an absolute belief that no matter what happens, I can still find fulfillment. Now, we all start off life optimistic. It seems to be our instinct from birth. We expect that our needs, whether physical or psychological, will be met. We just assume that when we're hungry, we'll be fed. And when we're scared, we'll be comforted. Now, I know this is not always the case for children. I'm not saying that. But my point is, it's a foundational expectation built into us, wired into us at birth. We expect to grow. We expect to learn. We expect to be able to express our values, skills, and interests. We expect fulfillment. And we have a positivity bias about ourselves as children and other people. We tend to focus on the positive actions of people rather than the negative when making judgments about them. And we're happy. Happiness, or in psychological terms, positive affect, is our baseline. It's our natural state in the absence of negative emotions. We're optimistic as kids, even in bad situations. Look at little Annie. Does today suck? Well, apparently, there's always the promise of tomorrow, and it's only a day away. Well, look at that little guy, Oliver Twist. He's singing, he's dancing, he's an orphan. He didn't have enough food, but he's convinced everything would turn out well. As we get older, our conditioned brain gradually gets socialized and acquires a negative worldview, which shrinks our natural inborn optimism. As a teenager, I had a name for this process of the system sucking out my optimism. I called it school. Optimism today has come under attack. I think that many people see an optimistic person as being naive, like the unfailingly optimistic character Pollyanna in the 1913 book or the 1960 movie, whichever you happen to catch. But there's a value to optimism because when you believe that no matter how a situation looks, you can find somewhere a path towards a fulfilling outcome, then you are being an optimist in a way that will empower you. Then you can say, it might not happen this way, but whatever happens will still work for me. And that kind of optimism creates resilience, the ability to cope during highly stressful situations. Just look at the cartoon character Wile E. Coyote, who spent massive amounts of money on grand and elaborate schemes to catch the skinny roadrunner. He always fails, often so badly that he's splattered on the rock ground of a canyon or crushed by an anvil. Yet this eternal optimist comes back in the very next cartoon, absolutely convinced he can catch that roadrunner this time. Now that's resilience in the face of adversity. It's stupidity too, but it is resilience. Research shows that people, although not necessarily cartoon coyotes, who are optimistic are going to have better outcomes because they avoid the frustration and despair of pessimists who are far more likely to give up. Resilient people, like prisoners of war, survive partially by being very realistic about the challenges and the conditions they face. They look for and focus upon the good parts of the situation, no matter how small. They look for what they can do in the situation, one little thing that can make things a little bit better. And then they look for another and another and another. And they keep doing this until they create a cascading positivity as opposed to a spiraling negativity. You can teach your conditioned brain, gatekeeper as I call it, to be optimistic by helping him discover, or her, that it can rely upon and trust in your deeper non-conscious self, pathfinder, to find a path towards fulfillment no matter what happens. And all you do is pause, ask, and just look at what happens next. Pause what you're doing, ask the Pathfinder's question, and just look to see what happens next. That's it. Want to learn more about how this new American mindfulness application, the Pathfinder's question, can level up any real life situation or problem you face? Check out what I'm doing at thepathfinderquestion.com. Want to find out more about optimism right now? Stay tuned, right, Rick?
Wow, that is powerful, Peter. Thank you so much. Frank, what do you got for us?
Well, in the U.S., there is an organization called Optimists International. It was founded, according to their website, in Buffalo, New York, in 1911. Their mission is, I quote, "By providing hope and positive vision, optimists bring out the best in youth, our communities, and ourselves." Their vision is Optimists International will be organized worldwide as the premier volunteer organization that values all children and helps them to develop to their full potential. Well, that's an interesting statement. In 1922, the Optimist Creed was adopted as an official creed of the organization and written by Christian Larsen. The creed was originally published under the title Promise Yourself in 1912. So that's about 110 years old. So the Optimist Creed has a few interesting things to share with you. It reads as follows. Promise yourself, one, to be so strong that nothing can disturb your peace of mind. 2, to talk health, happiness, and prosperity to every person you meet. 3, to make all your friends feel that there is something in them. 4, to look at the sunny side of everything and make your optimism come true. 5, to think only the best, to work only for the best, and to expect only the best. 6, to be just as enthusiastic about the success of others as you are about your own. 7, to forget the mistakes of the past and press onto the greater achievements of the future. 8, to wear a cheerful countenance at all times and give every living creature you meet a smile. And the last 2 ones, to give so much time to improvement of yourself that you have no time to criticize others. And the last, to be too large to worry, too noble to anger, too strong for fear, and too happy to permit the presence of trouble. In essence, these creeds help you to look at the sunny side of your life and that of others. No blaming, no anger, no fear. To create and maintain a peaceful mind is the key. Research shows, as Peter just said, that people with an optimistic outlook on life have a better pain management, a better immune system, and are more resilient because they look for the meaning in setbacks. And that's an interesting thing, the meaning in setbacks. This all sounds great, but life is a balance of dualities. The left side is balanced by the right side, like up and down, like salt and sugar, and so on. In other words, can you be too optimistic? Can you be too hopeful or having too much confidence in success, as the creed says? Think about this for a moment. How does this work in your life? As we have seen, there's value in being an optimist. But are you an optimist when you must cross a busy street with a lot of traffic? Instead of being an optimist, risk assessment might be a better option. Being careful is a very wise decision. That's why learning kids to cross the street in a safe way is very important. You learn not to be anxious, but to be cautious. In this example, you balance optimism with realism, unless you start to complain about the amount of traffic and that your authority should have done something about it a long time ago. Well, pessimism lurks around the corner at that moment. So what do you choose? A quick word about optimism and hope. I have a question for you. Are you saying to yourself things like, I hope this will be better in the future? Or, for instance, I hope I won't be diagnosed with, just name it. These are hopeful wishes and are always dealing with fear and anxiety about what might happen in the future. Understandable, but is this an effective way to deal with life challenges, you may ask? What would a real optimist think about these thoughts? The real optimist, to my opinion, will link it to realism. Hope for the weather to change, and in the meantime, adjust the sails. And as the Optimist Creed says, to be too large for worry, to be too noble for anger, too strong for fear, and too happy to permit the presence of trouble. By the way, something else. Do you think about borrowing money? Well, borrow it from pessimists. They don't expect it back. Rick, are you an optimist?
Wow. Good job, Frank. Thank you. That's good. It's really funny. Good advice, too. So here's what I think. Optimism is a choice. I recently had COVID. I'm still recovering at the time of this recording. So I had to make a choice all along the way. Everybody was calling, you know, not only doctors, but alternative healers and people who had good advice. And a lot of them were very worried also. So here I am thinking optimistically, because it's my nature. So luckily I had developed this habit over many years to be optimistic. So I knew I was going to get better. I knew I was going to feel better. But when? Because this was something that took longer than normal. It wasn't just a cold or a regular flu. I just felt different. And there were also changing symptoms. So isn't life like that? Doesn't life present a different symptom to us every day? And how can we maintain that level of hope and optimism? Well, is there something to celebrate today? That's one of the ways that I do it. I always had this thought in my head. I was always looking for the party at the end of each day. So as a young guy, Peter mentioned school. When I was in college, I was always going to school to get to the party, either later that night or on the weekend. So here I am, I'll be 60 in July, and I'm still looking for the party every day. So is there something to celebrate in your life? That's optimism. Yeah. Why be hopeful? Well, it's a long journey and we need tools, and optimism is a great tool. One of my favorite books is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Peter mentioned prisoners of war. And so Viktor Frankl was in a concentration camp. And in one of the chapters, I say scenes because I actually see it when I read this, he spoke of a day when he was sitting out in the yard, no food, no water, basically other prisoners dying and just their ribs showing and people collapsing from malnutrition. And he had his hand in his pocket, and in his pocket was a breadcrumb, an old crusty breadcrumb from a few days earlier. And he just kept that breadcrumb in his pocket. And he says in the book, which was the basis of one of the forms of therapy that he created, it was that touching of the crumb by his finger that gave him the hope, and it actually nourished his body. So although he had the same food and water or lack thereof as other people, touching that crumb had a physiological response in his body, and he didn't lose weight and he didn't lose his hydration. For some strange reason, he discovered that hope and touching that breadcrumb gave him something magical that the other prisoners didn't have. So that crumb in your pocket, his health versus the health of those around him, can this be a way of thinking about what we have in our own lives? So what is your crumb? Peter, give us some final thoughts.
Oh, yeah, Viktor Frankl, well worth looking into. All right, here's my final thoughts. So optimism is not, in my opinion, expecting to always be right. It's always expecting to be all right. Optimism is important because it creates and increases grit, lets you stick in there. And you can teach your brain to become more optimistic by responding to worries, by pausing, asking the pathfinder's question, and then just looking at what happens next. Or you can keep coming back here to the Road Ahead Cafe, grab yourself a cup or two of our homegrown brew and steep yourself in our warmth and wisdom until you feel, once again, road ready. Rick?
Great stuff, Peter. Thank you. Frank, you want to share your final thoughts?
Yes. Thinking about what you just said, Rick, about Viktor Frankl, he also wrote in the book, and I've noticed stories from people whose parents were in concentration camps. The sheer idea that you, for example, you are a musician and you want to make a piece of music, and the fact that you play it in your head and just you visualize the fact that you're in an orchestra, that you actually see something happening in your mind right now, distracted them from the atrocities that took place in those camps. That was really terrible what happened there. So the sheer idea of optimism is also the power of visualization and imagination, and we'll come across and have been talking about these subjects, but in the near future probably more, is very powerful. Winston Churchill once said, "A pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity. An optimist sees opportunity in every difficulty." I think it couldn't be said better. Yeah. My idea on optimism is to let it run loose without letting it run wild. And when we pair a positive outlook with a commitment to embrace reality, amazing things can happen. Do you want to know more? Contact us at Road Ahead Cafe or contact me on LinkedIn or my website, frankwise.nl, to book a 30-minute free session with me. Happy to meet you. And we, all three of us, are happy to meet you. And as always, what you think about and think about and bring about. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. So my final thoughts, where is your crumb? Just like Viktor Frankl, find your breadcrumb and hold on. Thank you for joining us today for the Road Ahead Cafe. Remember, if you like us, subscribe. And if you love us, make a quick selfie video right now to tell us why. Don't be shy. We look forward to getting together with you again next week. Until then, savor your day today.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Road Ahead Cafe. Hungry for more? Don't miss out. Follow this channel and be sure to subscribe to our email at theroadaheadcafe.com. Thank you for stopping by. See you next time.